you have to fail so many times to succeed. I think that just fuels me and it gets me fired up. And like when something doesn't work right, I especially only need one person to tell me like it's not going to work, and that fires me up. And I'm like, okay, watch me. I'll go make it work now.
What is up, everyone? I'm Kyle, and I am the host and founder of the Freedom to Fail podcast and Fail Nation, a community where failing while pursuing our dreams is a positive and taking uncertain chances is celebrated. This podcast is for those who have a dream of starting a business or doing something they've always dreamed of, but have been held back by their fears. Our purpose is to share the unsuccessful stories of successful people so that you can learn how to take the first steps towards achieving your dreams. You deserve to live a life full of freedom and free of fear. Let's do this.
All right, Fail Nation. How's it going, everyone? Hope you're having a great weekend. I am just sitting out here with Sierra McCleave. How are you doing?
I'm doing so good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Yeah. I'm super, super grateful to be able to be here with you. I'm just up in beautiful Midway, Utah. It is beautiful up here.
We picked a good day, right?
Oh, yeah. It's so nice. It's really hot again today. We finally had like a little bit of a cool temperature, but I guess Utah's not done with summer yet.
Not quite yet.
Next week, I think we'll probably... I mean, it's Utah, so it'll probably be snowing, so...
Absolutely. We'll next week, I have to bring in my lemon tree because it's so cold. So there, that's Utah.
But anyway, I'm super happy to be here talking with you. She actually is a serial entrepreneur like myself. So I'm super excited to just hear about these stories. You have, how many businesses do you have now?
Okay. So I have two right now.
Okay.
Thirst Drinks in Salt Lake City, Utah. We do drinks and treats and customer experience, and Dottie's Kolaches, which is in Heber outside of Park City. We specialize in a Czech pastry called kolaches, and we also do cinnamon rolls, orange rolls, and some other baked goods.
Awesome. And I mean, you all know I'm a baker too, so I am just super excited to try them out. I actually have no idea what a kolache is. So what is it?
So a kolache, it is a Czech pastry. It's a slightly sweet dough, not too sweet. And traditionally they are filled in the top with fruit fillings. Very traditional ones are actually poppy seed, prune, apricot. We do raspberry cream cheese, strawberry. And then in Texas, you actually find a lot of these Czech communities still. And so in Texas, they kind of Americanized it. They took that sweet dough, flattened it, and put like sausage, egg, cheese, cream cheese, bacon, jalapeno, barbecue, pulled pork, and then closed it up. Looks like a dinner roll. So those ones are technically called a klobasniki, but a lot of people call them kolaches. But so, Czech people kind of don't like that.
I got you. So do you sell those as well?
I do. Okay. Yeah, we do the savory and sweet variety. Then we do orange and cinnamon rolls and some cookies.
Man, how did you get into that?
Great question. So people ask me, was it your dream to be a baker? Which I'm going to ask you some questions about that at the end.
Yeah.
Mine is absolutely not. Mine was, I wanted to own a business. And so how I stumbled into it was, I was going to do a drink shop. For those not in Utah, drink shops are a thing here. Soda shops are a thing.
It's the addiction in Utah.
It is. I was going to do a drink shop, and I tried a kolache. It was in this building we were looking at, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. Did some research, and in Utah, there was no other place that was serving it at the time, and they were, but like people in Texas knew about them. And so I thought it would be a good differentiator because no other soda shop was doing an actual real handheld food. They were doing just cookies.
Yeah.
And so like that was 7 years ago, and now I can bake three things really super well. I'm pretty confident in about three things, but that's how that journey started.
So obviously that's been growing. It's been 7 years now, so you beat 90% of the small business owners. So that's exciting. And Thirst, you just told me you opened up a second location for that too, right?
So yes, we just opened a second location in Mill Creek, Utah. So our goal has kind of been to own Salt Lake. So we started in downtown Salt Lake 4 years ago, and we just opened Mill Creek about 3 months ago. So that was like mid-COVID. It was a very interesting and stressful experience, but we are definitely super fortunate with that. Like, we are one of the Corona time success stories, and I'm super grateful.
You basically have 2.5 stores, though, because you are also in the Vivint Arena, right?
Yeah, we got into Vivint Smart Home Arena where the Utah Jazz play. I believe it was our second year, and I like remember exactly where I was when my business partner called me and told me we got the contract, which he worked really super hard to get. And it was the most amazing feeling. It was so fun. So we're there, we're on the fifth floor. We're going to get a second location within as soon as everything opens back up. So I would say 2.5. It's really good. It's been tough now because of COVID, but it should pick up again as soon as everything opens back up.
So I'm curious with that, because I know it's super hard to get into locations like that. So can you just go into a little bit of like the backstory of how you were able to make that happen?
Yeah. So, well, we knew our strategy from the beginning has been based on a couple things, which we can get into the others, but one's employee satisfaction, which leads to customer experience, and then to own Salt Lake. So our hashtag for a while was We Are SLC, and we still use it. And that was a big part of it. The Utah Jazz are huge for Utah and for Salt Lake. And it was one of those things where we had kind of talked about it, and really my business partner, Ethan, spearheaded it. And he used some connections to kind of find out who was in charge of the food, and like took this person cookies and drinks and handwritten note like 4 or 5 times until he got a meeting. Like Ethan just has an extreme amount of hustle and tenacity, and he worked until we got in, and he basically went in and told him, because there was another drink place in there before us, and he went in and convinced him how we could up the experience of the people visiting. So
that's super cool. How long was the process from when you guys initially started talking with them to when you landed the contract?
So it took about 1.5 years.
Wow.
Of like courting.
Yeah.
Of courting the people, convincing them. Then we got awarded the contract, and then they did the build out for us. So they were actually really quick, and we were really lucky because they redid the entire Smart Home Arena the same exact time. So we got a brand new like area, perfect like to spec. They built it exactly how we wanted, and it's super efficient, and like it was the most incredible feeling to walk in and see our thirst drink sign like in the arena. Like I'll never forget it. So fun.
How do you feel when you go to the arena and you see that still?
It's a whole new experience. Like it's a whole new experience. Like it means so much to go to the games and to go get a drink and just think about all the blood, sweat, and tears that went into it, and also the concerts. Like it just makes it that much more delicious. It's so fun. I love it. It's so fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm sure that is something that most people can only dream about, but you guys went and made it happen. So congrats for that.
Thank you so much.
So I want to go back a little bit to like the beginning. Obviously, you've been able to grow both of your businesses and do really well with that. But was it always your goal to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think so, but I didn't ever verbalize it that way.
Okay.
I just was always very entrepreneurial spirited. And looking back now, I can see like my first thing that I did that looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, like it was I mowed lawns, or nice. I wanted to. So I like old school computer, like clip art, made a poster that put on our mailbox. I think one person took like my little business card, but like I was trying to hustle and get it done. Like I had paper routes, and then in high school, I remember I didn't know how to edit video, but I knew these girls who did, and they recorded all the games. And I was like, why don't we record the homecoming game and sell the tape? Because like it's a memory, especially for the seniors. And so we did that. I don't remember how many we sold, but we sold quite a few. But like they had to do kind of all the work. I set up the stuff and kind of sold it, but they edited it. And that was another thing looking back on. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's kind of obvious. That's just like,
yeah.
I think you just look back and you're like, it's in the DNA. And it's pretty cool. It's fun.
So was one business just not enough for you? You just had to go out and just start another business?
You know how this is, right?
Of course, yeah.
So it was really, so Ethan and I did a shaved ice shack, and we did it for a couple summers because I had the shaved ice actual shack, and he was in high school. He had the drive and determination. He just wanted it done, but he needed a place to do it. So we partnered up on it. And
how did you meet him?
He called me because I posted the shack for sale. And he's like, hey, would you rent this to me? And I was like, no, but I'll go. Because it was like $8,000 and I was trying to get money out of it. But I was like, well, I'll go into business with you. I've done shaved ice. And it just got to the point where after the 2 summers, it was, we need like 10 of these or 15 or to do something else. And I said, I don't think I want to do shaved ice, but I would do a soda shop because I really had that scratch to itch still, because Dottie's became Kolaches. That's the unique thing. That is the thing we learned very, very quickly. So we steered away from sodas, and it kind of just happened. And I had the knowledge, and Ethan has the drive and determination and just freaking hustle. And it just kind of happened. But I have promised a lot of my family members nothing for like 6 months or a year, like nothing else, just focus. So
cool. So I want to go into that and talk a little bit about your experience with thirst, because obviously I have a little cookie company, and I am going into a market where there are
a couple of very, very big competitors.
Yeah.
You did something very similar. You went into the soda market and there are like three or four really, really well-known competitors as well. So what were some of your strategies to set yourself apart from them? And how did you go about really establishing your place in the soda community?
I love this question. We knew from the beginning we wanted to differentiate in a couple ways, because I told Ethan, I was like, they're popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
At the time there weren't quite as many, but there still were a couple, like two really big players. Yeah. And I said, this is how, after all the ones I've been to, because I did a whole bunch of recon, what I see as a gap in that market is customer experience. So we really, really, really bet heavy on customer experience. We wanted it to be a Disneyland-like experience, and that's really what we work for every single day. Sometimes we knock it out of the park. Sometimes we know we have some opportunity. But customer experience, and I also really wanted to focus on the speed of the line, which we have done a really good job at, and at some point it kind of just gets difficult with how big the line is, but we've cracked the code in even the last 3 or 4 weeks at Mill Creek on that one and really refined that process. And it's always been the top of our mind. So focus on that customer experience and speed.
So how do you go about doing that? If someone's in a drive-thru in their car, how do you make the experience memorable for them?
So we knew we wanted to do a couple things. So our tagline is happy drinks and treats. So a couple things that we did from the beginning was we have the window open when they approach. We're smiling. Eye contact and say, welcome to Thirst. What can I get for you today? And when they leave, we say, have a happy day. Just those things alone consistently just uplift people's day. Like a lot of our Yelp reviews are just like, oh, and have a happy day. Like people started to catch on and like, oh my gosh, like it actually brightened my day. We tried to really push, like if there's a regular customer, learn their name and their order. So you can be like, oh, hey, Sally, it's good to see you. Would you like your usual today? And how many popcorns today?
Yeah.
Speaking of popcorn, we give free popcorn with every single purchase. That's just something like our demographic are moms. They have kids in the car. Like let's give the kids something to munch on while mom's getting her drink and while she's getting drink and getting ready to go take care of the family. We'll always try to make it right too. So if there's an issue or something goes wrong, like we are going to be the first to apologize and recognize and do what we can to make it right. Whether that be a gift card, replacing the drink, recognizing, you know, where we went wrong and apologizing and really owning it. And then just anything, constant conversations about how can we make the customer experience better. That's all of our conversations, basically.
So has that alone been what you attribute most of your success to?
I think that differentiates us a lot. And then just really, really trying to provide value. Like our socials, we really focus on, we're only going to post if we educate or we entertain. And you will never really hear us say, come and buy this, like ever. Mm-hmm. It's always, this is what's in the drink. This is the local business we're featuring this weekend to try to like elevate the community and that kind of thing. So it's been a combination of a few things, but focusing on really our number one is actually employee satisfaction, which we could go back to, but I believe that directly translates to customer experience. Because if your employees are happy,
yeah,
really happy, and they know that you care about them, they will give that type of experience or more to the customers. So that's really what we have focused on.
So how do you go about doing that? Because I believe in that 100% as well. Mm-hmm. I think that that is something that most companies look, they just skip over it because they want to cut costs however much they can. So how do you go about doing that? Like making sure that your employees, I mean, my guess is you're not paying them extreme amounts of money. So you have to do it in something other than money.
And money's interesting too. You'll find that you can pay someone a lot of money and they can still not give a crap.
Yep.
So we do a couple things. Okay, we try to make them feel like family very, very rapidly. So Ethan actually taught me this that I believed he learned in his fraternity. So we give nicknames as soon as they come on board. Like we give them a nickname and like we make sure they like it. It's like something that they either they volunteer or we just kind of make up. So they already feel like family. We spend a lot of time in the opening that first week. We have a company culture handbook that we go through and videos that they go through to really learn about what the Thirst brand means, and our core values. And then they have to do a write up on what the Thirst brand means to them, and they present it to the team. So they're also buying into the brand early. Yeah. very, very early. And they're sharing that with people. And when you share something like that with others, I think it brings you more that family feel.
For sure.
They have, Ethan and the managers have regular one-on-ones with the team. Like, they need to know that they can come to us with suggestions and issues and ways to make things better, and we will hear them. We actually do pay more than a lot of the other places, starting. And that's on purpose too, because we're asking a lot of them. We are really asking them to be on their A game, and for to ask someone to do that for 6 hours straight, 7 hours straight, like a Disneyland type experience, then they earn every bit of it and more. So those are some of the things that we do.
Awesome. Yeah, I like that a lot. That is, those are some good tips that I'm definitely going to try and use in my businesses too. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, no worries.
So obviously I want to jump in now and talk about some of your shortcomings and some of your failures and mistakes that you've made along the way, because that's the only way that we get better. And
absolutely.
So for you, whether it be in either of these two businesses or just previously, what would you say has been your biggest failure?
Okay, one of them is, and this was just an experience thing. I don't think it definitely wasn't intentional. I just had to learn it. But learning to take ownership of everything. Learning that every single thing was my fault. So early on, it's very easy in business to have maybe your employees overbake cookies, or they write down a pre-order wrong and you lose all that money because you bake it a day early or something like that. I'll use the baking references since you know what I'm talking about. But the reality is, if that person overbaked cookies or wrote down the wrong date, then they were not trained properly, and that's your fault. And early on, I would get mad and I would like huff around and I would talk to them sternly, like it's going to make a difference, like it's going to increase their buy-in. It does the opposite.
Yeah.
And I learned that with like my corporate job a little bit, but a lot with Dottie's and with Thirst. So learning to take ownership easier. It's like Jocko Willink says.
Yep, I was going to just bring that up. Extreme ownership.
Yeah, that's the book. The book that converted me. That's the book that taught me about it. And discipline equals freedom. It's the same thing. It's you actually get liberated when you do that, because now you can fix it.
Yeah.
When it's someone else's fault, you cannot fix it.
Yep.
And there's just excuses. So that's one. The other one I would say is, early on, I knew that I wanted the company culture to be amazing and to be like a place where people wanted to come and wanted to be, and employee satisfaction to be very high. But I didn't do a good enough job of protecting it. So there would be times when we were struggling with employees, in that I had few and I needed more. And there was someone who was perhaps toxic.
Yeah.
That I would hang on to just a little bit longer to try to get through that period where I needed more people, instead of just cutting the cord, sucking it up and doing 70 hours that week to protect the culture. And it suffered for it. And there would be a really rough, it was a really rough couple month recovery. And for a lot of businesses, it's years, or they can't recover. So I feel grateful that I learned it kind of quick, but still it put the team through a lot of hell.
Yeah.
When, you know, that person wasn't helping, they were hindering a lot, and they were like spreading their negativity. So I think I could have done a lot better job on that earlier, but it's something that you learn as you go. So
cool. So I want to go back to the extreme ownership thing, because I agree 100% with that.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any moments, like specific moments that you can think of where someone might have made a mistake, but you had to just dive deep and just be like, suck it up and be like, okay, this is actually on me? Are there any specific moments that come
every
to
day
mind?
Every day. But yeah, let me tell you about a specific one that happened recently. We had a fridge go out. And we lost all of breakfast. So that's probably about $600 in potential revenue, for that. And plus like your costs and plus your labor costs.
Yep.
That it took to make it all. So it's significant for us. Breakfast is kind of our thing. Like, we're busiest for breakfast and lunch. So the entire thing went out. And for us, it might not sound like a lot, but for a single bakery in a small town, it is.
Yeah.
And this went out, and we have on our checklists to check the fridge temperatures and write them down and let a manager know if it's below a certain number. So we had it on the checklist, but it didn't happen. And so we lost all that product. And not only that, we lost that product, but we lost also future product because it was in the same fridge. And so I talked about this in my Instagram story a little bit. which is sometimes therapy. My old tendency would have been to get mad and like throw a little fit and ruin every single person's day. But we caught it in the morning at like, I mean, it was like, it was late, man. It was like 6 a.m. and we open at 7. But fortunately, what I did do was go in and just try to regroup the team and say, okay, this is what's happened. This is what we need to do to recover. We're going to open an hour late. I need to call this many people in. We're going to re-roll it and let's just go and try to make the best of the day. Whereas if I wouldn't have done that, it would have negatively affected the entire day. We wouldn't have recovered. Everyone would have been in a horrible mood. And I've done that before. And yeah, that is not the outcome that will yield the best result.
So in that moment, what was going through your mind? Like, how are you feeling?
So initially you do feel like, oh man, I put this on the checklist and I did this. But the reason that it was my fault and the reason that it takes me less time to get to that place of just accepting that it was my fault. It takes me less time than it used to. But I should have been training on using the checklist, and I hadn't been. I hadn't been reminding. I hadn't been doing follow-up trainings that I know I should have been doing. I hadn't been explaining why. People are always going to react better and have better buy-in when they know why, instead of just being told what to do.
For sure.
So initially I got a little upset and I was like, oh my gosh, it's on the checklist. I'm going to freak out. Like, I'm going to write up whoever did it. And then I was like, wait a second. Okay. Yeah, it's on the checklist, but when was the last time you did a training? When was the last time you told someone why it's so important and talked to everyone about it? And then it just is so obvious that it's your fault, and it's so frustrating, and it's so humbling, and it's really hard, especially at first, to set aside your ego. But the quicker you can get to that, the quicker it's like, okay, well, I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to do better. Now how can I save the whole team? And like, let's just get back on track and play the game.
So for me, one thing that I try and do, and I'm not very good at it either, but I own a window cleaning company. And so with window cleaning, when there's a lot of other competitors, every tiny detail matters. Mm-hmm. And so you can't rush over things. And I found that there were a lot of times where I hired just a bunch of new people and I would train them real quick and send them out on jobs. And then I would hear feedback from my customers like, oh, the windows look great, but there are watermarks on the ground or just all these other little things. And I'm just like, how could you be so stupid? Like, that was what I was thinking.
Right.
But one thing that I've learned and kind of the way that I approach it now is like, have you ever heard of the rule of seven, like in marketing, just how someone has to see something seven times before they make a purchase. So I kind of apply that now with like training. Like, mm-hmm, you have to teach them seven different times is what I've seen for, mm-hmm, them to actually understand it and be able to get that into the routine.
I love that. I actually love that you put a number to it too, because it makes it, you could measure that.
Yeah.
You could actually measure that. How many times have they been exposed to this? And I think another thing too is how have they been exposed to it? Because people learn so differently.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you write it out. Maybe there's a video. Maybe there's like images. That's something that's helped us in the bakery. Is like, this is how it should actually look. And here's a training video on it. And that's something I need to get better at. But I love that you apply the rule to seven to that. I'm consider it stolen.
Well, that's totally fine. I had to learn the hard way. So, well, you brought up something that I think is extremely important, and that's how you interact with that employee as well, like after the fact, because it's super easy when you're in the heat of the moment to lash out at them and, mm-hmm, to say, this is horrible. You should have known better. But I just barely finished reading How to Win Friends and Influence People. And there's one part that really stood out to me, and it's because I know that I need to do better.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how those things always hit the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
But in it, he says, look, if you're working with someone and they make a mistake and you just hired them, they don't have the years of experience that you do. So like, the best way to go about doing this, and it's something that I still need to do a lot better at putting into practice because I just have a long way to go, mm-hmm, with that. But he says, like, you have to let them know that there was a mistake made, otherwise they won't get better. But you also have to let them know that you're a human as well, and that, like, if you were in that same position experience-wise, you probably would have made the same mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So let them know and be like, hey, so this is what happened. Like, I would have done the exact same thing if I was in your shoes. Like, it's something that I learned with experience. So let's just work on this together so that we can not have those same things happen. Something, mm-hmm, along those lines. Obviously,
yeah,
as you can tell, I don't know how to do it exactly, but it's just really letting them know that you are human, that you don't expect them to be perfect because they don't have that experience, and that you're going to work with them to make it better in the future too. Mm-hmm. It's not just them doing it.
It builds trust and respect too. I've seen a lot of managers come in, again, my fault, who maybe think that they deserve respect, when you need to earn it. And that type of practice helps you earn it. And that gets you to a point with that employee that you could ask them, maybe you don't, but you could ask them if there's an emergency, I need you to work a 12-hour day. And that's the type of employee that's going to be like, I will do it.
Yeah.
I will do that thing for you. Whereas if you come in yelling and blaming them, they're going to be like, I'm going to peace out after my 6-hour shift.
As soon as it's done.
Yeah, as soon as it's done. That book, I love that book. I've listened to that book like 6 times, and a lot of my practices come from that book.
Yeah.
I have do you want an example of what happened today?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I baked lunch today. So they look like dinner rolls, but they're filled with barbecue pulled pork, cheese, Hawaiian pizza. And I'm baking them and they're just not like proofing. They're not looking like these beautiful puffy dinner rolls. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And it's only like 4 pans out of like 12. What's going on? And then I realized what happened. We do a light coat of spray so the plastic wrap doesn't stick. But if you go too much, it kills like the yeast's ability to like rise. And I was so mad. I was like, what the heck? But the people who rolled it are like within the first month of their training. So whose fault is it? It's mine. So I sent a picture and I said, this is what happens when this goes. We can't let it happen again, but it looks like there's a training gap. So I'm going to work on it. And please let me know what questions you have. And when I got there, or when they arrived today, because they came and worked the same shift, they were very apologetic. But like in the past, I would have just been like, yeah, fix it.
Yeah.
So direct, because I'm not trying to be mean, but I'm like trying to move on to these other things you have to do. However, but now I was just like, it's not your fault. Like, we obviously have gaps in the training. You guys did the best you could. And that's absolutely true. And the quicker you own that, the quicker you can find a solution and make your training so much better. And it's just better for everyone. They have more self-esteem. They know you have their back. They know that they're not going to do it again because they learned, but they didn't know. They could not have known.
And one thing I love about that is the fact that, again, you accepted all responsibility and you admitted your flaws. I think a lot of, especially first-time business owners, they try and overcompensate for their lack of experience by saying, this is the boss, I am the boss, and this is how things need to be. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you said it earlier, that does the complete opposite of what you are hoping it does. It's going to drive people away. And it's funny because, again, with the podcast, one thing I've mentioned before is that like what really brings people together is vulnerability. And that's the same with business owners and with being a manager. Like you can get work done just by being a dictator and by doing all this stuff, but it's going to be clock in, clock out. It's not going to be a family type of feel, and you're going to build resentment. But when you really show your flaws and just be like, look, I want to make this successful. I'm sure you guys do too. I don't really know what I'm doing, but we're going to work on it along the way. And when you take responsibility like you did, that creates a huge loyalty where they don't expect things to be perfect. And that's big, because you're going to make mistakes. So you want to build that loyalty with your employees.
Absolutely. And I think it's almost like success versus legacy with your business, because you can make it successful by telling everyone what to do.
Yeah.
But you can make a legendary brand and experience for your team that's going to like hopefully make their life better in a lot of different ways, and then your customers' lives better by like being a good person and owning what you need to and being vulnerable. I love it. I love that you put it that way.
So yeah, man, I could just go off for days on all this stuff.
Same.
It's crazy. I want to jump back again to talking about failure, because obviously like I think that's huge. Being vulnerable and accepting that you fail and being able to admit that to your team or to whoever else that you failed as well. So for you, obviously failure is super important, but how do you not get paralyzed by a fear of failure? Like when you fail, how do you use that to move forward, as opposed to what a lot of people do, using it as an excuse to not try again?
That's a good question. It's just like working out. You have to flex that muscle and practice, and then it gets easier. I'm sure early on I was nervous. That's why we started in a small town, is because I was kind of scared.
Okay.
I was like, I don't know how it's gonna do big, like let's see how it does in a small town. That definitely was a decision based on fear. And
did you do it just because you wanted to kind of build in an excuse in case it failed?
I definitely think it could have been a subconscious thing. Okay. Where it's like, oh, it was too small of a town. But luckily we were very well accepted by the community, and it got me to kind of learn a lot of things that helped me prepare for when we opened Thurston Salt Lake. It's kind of like the at-bats, right? You have to have so many, you have to have so many failures to finally hit success. And I think one of your guests just was talking about this. You know if you're going to get so X number of failures and you're going to have to hit gold.
Yeah.
At some point. So as it is right now, I get excited by it now, which sounds like really weird. The funnest thing about entrepreneurship, I think, for me is like you can do something and see a direct correlation as to if it worked or not, especially in the industry that I'm in. I can do a big campaign and see did it work or not. And if it didn't, like, okay, well, let's try something different. And when it goes, then you can utilize those things you learned to do something else. So I think it's just about the at-bats. Like, if you look at it that way, and you have to fail so many times to succeed. And if you look at any great person in history, they absolutely failed so many times.
Oh, yeah.
More times than you've probably even let yourself try.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that just fuels me and it gets me fired up. And like when something doesn't work right, I especially only need one person to tell me like it's not going to work. And that fires me up. And I'm like, okay, watch me. Yeah. I'll go make it work now. And if you can do that internally, like you don't have to have external like validation or someone discrediting you. But if you can do that internally and play that game, and it's like, all right, like what did you learn? And let's go and let's do the next one and get it better. It's just, I don't know.
So that reminds me, well, it just got me thinking with all that stuff, like I think just one, and this is the reason why I do this podcast is because I feel like people focus too much on the success. And so they see someone who's really successful and they don't look into their story. They don't look into all the failures that they've gone through. And so like, and even then, even if they do dive into their life story and look at the reported failures, there are a bunch of other smaller ideas that person has had that didn't make it into that newspaper article or into that book or into that movie because they failed so quickly at it.
Right.
So like you have to really think about that. It's just, it's a numbers game for sure. Yeah. And it's an interpretation game because I mean, we know this, but one person can go through an experience and have a completely different experience than someone else does because of the way that they think about that.
Mindset.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm curious about this. I want to hear your thoughts on this because you've talked to a lot of people, but like how much fear holds us back. And if you think about the worst thing that could happen, I learned this from Tim Ferriss. You listen to Tim Ferriss?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Okay. So fear setting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've talked about that
on
my podcast.
This is the best thing you can do, honestly. This is the best thing you can do to very quickly get over fear of failure is you think about the worst case scenario. I actually do this all the time.
Yep.
When I'm stressed out and I'm like anxious and like I can't sleep, I'm like, okay, what is the worst thing that can happen? So I had this experience during COVID, like mid-COVID. One of my baker quit the Friday night before a beignet day at night. She was the only one baking the next day, and I had to do beignets, which is a really big day for us. And so I felt sorry for myself for a little bit, and then I thought about what's the worst thing that can happen? Like, if I cannot actually mentally handle this, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? I close that day, and then I start again on Monday. Like, that's the worst thing that can happen. Like, I miss out on a lot of revenue, and it might be tight, but I can make it up. So I think I use it all the time, and I think it's the best thing you can do. You think about the worst case scenario. You can take actions to mitigate it, and usually it's not even as bad as what's played out in your mind because you haven't actually written it down on paper.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. We give power to the unknown. And so when we really verbalize or we write down what can happen, then it makes us realize, oh, that's nothing. Like, I can deal with that.
Yeah.
But in our mind, we like to psych ourselves out so much and be like, oh, for example, starting a business, you can be like, oh man, everyone's going to look at me as a failure. And you like associate your identity with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just look at it logically and you do some fear setting, it's like, what's the worst thing that happens if you fail a business? Honestly, look at it from someone else's point of view. If you see one of your good friends try something and fail, at least for me personally, I have a lot of respect for them for going at it because I know deep down I have a lot of goals that I haven't had the courage to go after.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they failed, I still have a lot of respect for them going after their dreams.
Absolutely.
And we always think about the worst in ourselves. So we think that they think that we're a failure because we think that we're a failure.
Right.
So we just need to stop identifying with what happens to us and just recognize that the fact that you're doing something hard makes you freaking incredible because you're doing something that 99.9% of the people wouldn't ever do.
Won't even try. And who cares what anyone thinks? Because they're not they're probably not going to do it.
Exactly.
And that's, oh man, I could dive into this all day, but that's, I'm shocked to hear about how many people that is really an issue for. And I feel like super lucky and blessed that I don't, I'm sure I have it with some things probably that I work through, but like to think about what other people think and that's going to stop you from like living your best life.
See, I speak like, from experience what? Like that. That was me.
Yeah.
Like, it still is hard a lot of times.
It is.
Because like, sometimes even with Better Than Grannies, like it's very brand new. It's done like surprisingly well. Like I've been very pleased with how well it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like I haven't sold out every week. And so part of me is like, oh no, maybe I shouldn't talk about it because maybe it's losing momentum and maybe like people are going to stop like wanting to buy it because maybe the product's not as good. And mm-hmm. I just go deep into my own brain a lot of times. Yeah. And I have to like smack myself and be like, that's stupid. Like it's so funny. There was one person, oh, what's her name? Rachel, I don't know. She has a really big, Rachel Hollis. I don't know if you've ever heard of her.
I'm
she
not
has
sure.
a really big popular podcast and she's written a couple books. But what she said, and this is a story that resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
She said like on one of her books, she wrote it and got like 500 positive Amazon reviews, something like that, but then she would get one bad review and be like, oh no, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I shouldn't be a writer. Maybe right. I should just stop trying. And for me that resonates big because that's how I am. Like
yeah.
with my cookie company, like I've gotten a ton of positive reviews from people saying that my cookies are really good and that they would buy them again, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then I've also had people that were like, yeah, like there was this flavor that I didn't like, and I would get so hung up on that I wouldn't even read the rest of their message where it's like, but your other three flavors are awesome. I mm-hmm. just would get hung up on that one bad flavor and be like, oh well, I guess I'm not a baker.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like something that even I deal with to this day. So
you know, that's true. I looking at it at all different levels, I have been so hung up on Yelp reviews before, like so hung up. And I still do. Like they are the ones, I definitely respond to all my negatives, like as soon as possible. Because then
that's
you kind of, you kind of, yes,
do it immediately.
Respond as soon as possible. It alleviates. It's done with. You've taken care of it. Like, and a lot of times they'll change it.
Exactly.
But you do, you do start wrapping up your identity and your self-worth in the business a lot. And it's hard to keep those separate sometimes. But I just think like, man, if you can just think about the worst thing that's going to happen and then move forward, it's so liberating. And if you also think too, I like Gary Vee's point about this is like, actually pretty much no matter how old you are, you still have quite a bit of time. Like really, like he talks about, you know, 50, 60 years old, like you still have time. You can mess up so many businesses and still find happiness. And if that's in business, that's great. If it's with your family, that's great. If it's both, that's good. But you have time. And I think we just get really, really anxious about that. I do.
It's something that I'm trying to do a lot better too, is fear setting, especially with my business, because man, brand new business, you have fear and you have uncertainty every single day, every mm-hmm. single minute. And so it's like really hard to kind of stay grounded. But it's like, it might sound a little difficult for some people out there, like taking the time to look deep inside what you mm-hmm. are really afraid of.
Yeah.
But that's the only way that you can really like stop being afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Is just,
you have to face it.
Exactly.
You 100%. Have to face it. And it's usually not as bad as you think, but sometimes it might be.
Yeah.
But you can get through it and you can figure it out. And but you have to look at it.
Exactly. Stop running away. Just mm-hmm. turn around and face it. So I want to kind of wrap up here being a little bit more practical than what we've done on the podcast in the past, because I know that a lot of our listeners out there have business ideas. They have maybe some sort of dream or creative outlet that they want to pursue, but they don't know where to start. So with everything that you've gone through and all of the lessons that you have learned from your businesses and from your life experience, what would you say, like if you were to restart from scratch right now with a bakery, what would you say has been, or what steps would you take to start a brand new business?
Okay. So restarting with the bakery right now, what are some things that I do?
Yep. Your first, let's say three. What would be your top three things that you would do?
Okay. If I was restarting with the bakery.
I'm just asking this for a selfish reason.
This is good.
I'm in the same place.
Okay. So I would try to find a space and equipment for the business that I want, not the business that I currently have, within reason. So I spent a lot of money on crappy equipment and too small of a space. So if you have a dream and a plan to, I don't know if you're going to ship or
you're going to ship.
So, or have a really good strategy on getting to that next place very, very quickly. But really, usually it's, in my experience, it's been better to invest kind of now in the business you want. And I used to say like in 10 years, but sometimes that's not a reality. But really be thinking about that, because sometimes you'll be like, oh, I can make this space work. I can make this equipment work. And it bites you very, very quickly, because used refrigeration equipment is a problem sometimes. Everyone. Okay, so I'd say plan for the business that you want. I would say I would get The E-Myth Revisited, the book The E-Myth Revisited, and I would go through it exactly. Like, do your primary aim.
I mean, he talks about a pie shop in there.
Yes. Yeah, do that. You could do this with any business. But yeah, if I was doing the bakery again, and I did this the first time, primary aim and your goals and your position agreements. Like, that book is so delicious. It gives you, it's so practical. Like, and it's not just theory. You can actually go through it. So I would do that for sure. And then I would say plan on 10 times the expenses that you are planning on. Like, if you're just on paper, you haven't done anything, you have no idea, but you're figuring, you're doing your best to figure out your expenses. Plan on 10 times more than you think. And plan on just about that much more work, because that's really what it is. But don't be scared of it. Like, you can do it. It's going to just give you more of a buffer if you do that.
Yeah.
Is that practical or
for
no?
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that's great. That's the reality of it.
It really is.
Being an entrepreneur is hard work. There's a quote that I heard that I really like, and it said, being an entrepreneur means working 80 hours a week so that you don't have to work 40 hours a week.
Oh my gosh, that's so true.
And it's just so funny, because it really is the case. You work so much more than you ever think that you're going to work, but you do it because it's the most fulfilling thing. At least for me personally, like, nothing beats the highs that you get as an entrepreneur.
100%.
So it's totally worth putting in the 80 hours a week at first, and probably 100 to 120 hours a week at the first part of it that you got to do. But it always is worth it in the end.
It absolutely is.
Even if your business fails, it's still worth it, because now just think about how many awesome lessons that you have for when you start your next business.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if you go back to the corporate world, how many lessons you learn that can help that business that you go work for. And that's something mm-hmm. that a lot of people don't think about. But really, failing in business gives you so much that you can use to help someone else out. If someone came to me and was like, look, I started a business and I failed, and this is why, like, let me help you so you don't make the same mistakes. Oh goodness, that would be like priceless, having
everything.
That lesson.
Yeah.
So,
and it's only a failure if you don't learn anything from it and don't do anything with that knowledge.
Yeah.
100%. Like, it's not even, I wouldn't even call it a failure. Like, you might think about that. You might feel sad or whatever, but the stuff that you learned, that could have been the thing that helps the next one or some the business two from now,
mm-hmm.
like, go. Or even if it's not, like, you're defining success with, like, your revenue, that's the thing that makes you very, very happy in 2 years because of the lessons that you learned
for
with
sure.
that failed business. So,
and one thing I would say is every single day, this is something that I just started doing and it's really, really helpful. Find something that you failed at that day and write down. I literally have a failure journal. I write down one lesson that I learned from something that I failed at that day so that I don't make that same mistake. Because a lot of times, like you said, when we fail at something, we try and push it in the back of our mind and just ignore it. But then because we don't think about it and plan for it, we end up making the same mistake. So that's something that's really helped me, and I would recommend it.
I love that. I'm going to start doing that. I had an idea too while we were talking that would be very interesting, because you said most people only see your successes or like talk about successes, right? It'd be a really fun challenge. I don't know how one would do this. Seems like a good thing for your platform, or for a week or for 2 days. You document your failures.
Oh yeah.
On the socials.
So there's a guy, I can't remember his name, but he has a TED Talk. And he calls it rejection therapy. It's so
that.
Cool. Everyone should look it up. I'll post a link about it. But basically, he spent 100 days doing things with the sole purpose of getting told no because he was afraid of failure. And so he would, like, for example, go to, just starting out super basic, he would go to a pizza place and ask to buy a donut, something like that. Yeah. Just like very, very basic. But then he would start going and like ramping it up more and more. And it was fascinating. And it definitely is super, super cool.
I love that. I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah. So, okay, just to wrap up, I have got, I mean, you've heard it on other episodes of mine, but I do the lightning round. So it's just some of my favorite questions, just rapid fire, what comes to your mind. So number one, what would you say is your biggest fear?
Regret.
I like that. I definitely relate to that. The second one is, what is your personal definition of failure?
I think not learning from it and giving up. Like, you don't have to do the same thing again, but I think giving up is, you didn't learn anything from it. You're not going to try anything ever again. That would be failure to me, is just not learning from it. You can always learn from it and be better.
The next one is, obviously, I'm a big believer of habits. I think habits are super important to finding success. I'm actually just finishing up a book called Atomic Habits right now, and it's really, really good. But what would you say is one habit that you have that has contributed to your success?
I'll give you a recent one that I've learned in the last 1.3 years. And this, I mean, it might sound cliche, but exercise, daily exercise. I have not missed a day of exercise in 1.3 years. And that I started because of stress and anxiety, and like I was about to lose it. And that's something that I do every single day that taught me about discipline and that we make a lot of excuses. And so just making time, I make time for it every single day, an hour at least. You can do whatever you want. But that has changed my life for so many reasons.
Yeah. And it definitely has affected me personally, my moods. When I'm exercising, I'm way more functional and I am way happier, way more optimistic. When I don't, then I'm very pessimistic. I have no motivation and I don't do very well. So I am a testament of that as well.
The endorphins are delicious.
For sure. So the next one is, what is your favorite book and why?
Extreme Ownership. We'll go nonfiction.
Yeah.
Can I do a fiction one too?
For sure.
Okay. Extreme Ownership, for the reasons we talked about, it taught me about accountability, and that has been, other than exercise in the last 1.3 years, been the biggest thing that's changed my life in the last seven. Like, it changes the game completely. You take accountability and ownership, and you can determine your destiny at that point instead of saying it's someone else's fault and someone else has control of your happiness in your life. So Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. My fiction one would be Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
I've never read it, but it's a classic, and so it's on my list. I can't tell you the last time I've read a fiction book besides Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter, so I read that a lot.
Fiction's hard for me now, but that's one I would dive into regularly.
Yeah, cool. I'll have to check that one out. So the last question is, for our listeners out there, what is one piece of advice that you would give them?
One piece of advice I would give you is, those of you starting a business, thinking about starting a business, it's very natural and probable that you will get entirely consumed with it. It's your baby, it's your child. However, trying your best to be deliberate about maintaining that balance and taking care of yourself, and that does include like involving other people. It's very easy to get sucked in and like it's all you do, and you lose friends, they just kind of fade.
Yeah.
It's not like they hate you. It's just like you're not taking care of those relationships. That's one thing I wish I would have done more early on, is really taking the time to nurture those things in balance. And it's very hard because it needs a lot of attention and love, especially in the beginning. And the beginning could be 10 years, it could be 15, it could be 5, you know?
Yeah.
So I would say just really finding that balance, taking care of your social network, your friends, making sure you're nurturing those relationships, and really taking care of yourself, like thinking about it like a machine. Like, it'll break down if you don't get enough sleep, if you don't eat well, if you don't exercise. Like, you're the machine that's going to keep it going, and you got to be well-rounded, healthy.
I think that's a really good point. Speaking from experience, when I started my first weekend with Better Than Grannies, I was just like, oh, I'll be good. I'll do it all myself. Like, be good. I literally started baking. It was Friday night at, I think, 5. And I was like, I'll have plenty of time to get everything done because I was doing a pop-up on Saturday at 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'll have plenty of time. Started at 4, at 5 on Friday. Literally baked all through the night. Ended up not even finishing up until 5. Didn't eat anything that day.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, just nonstop because I had to get everything done. And I did that the next week, too. I was like, I'm going to start on Thursday night and do a little bit. So I did like one batch of dough on Thursday night and then the other batches on Friday night. So I was like, I'm going to do a little bit better. Friday, I was like, yeah, I got one done yesterday, so I'll start at 7. Then I ended up doing the exact same thing. Didn't take care of myself at all. And it was just, it was really bad. And one thing that I learned, I'm not a health major at all by any means, but the most interesting class that I've ever taken, well, there were two. They were both actually health related at the University of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them was in my health economics class. And they talked about the importance of doing, I guess we'll just call it like downstream techniques of health versus upstream techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the United States, we are all about upstream. We go to we go to the doctor when we are sick.
Mm-hmm.
We go to the mechanic when our car is broken. We don't do a lot of preventative measures. We only do fixing measures. And so I think that's super important, like especially with relationships. We don't do a good job at cultivating relationships when we're in a good place, when things are strong. But then they end up disappearing. And so then when we need them, when we're going through those hard times, we don't have anything to rely on there. So I think that's something that I wish I would have learned earlier in life.
Yes.
And I think that everyone needs to do, not only health-wise, which I think is super important. That's a whole other discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But also relationship-wise or any other thing, put in the work when things are good so that it's there for you when things are bad and you need it.
Absolutely. Proactive versus reactive.
Exactly.
It gets you in a much better place mentally and physically with
for
all
sure.
that. I love that. So true.
So, yeah, man, this has been awesome talking to you here. I've loved it.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Of course. So to wrap up, the last thing, I want our audience to be able to connect with you and learn more about you and also obviously try out some of your amazing goods that you sell. So where is the best place that people can find out more about you and about your businesses?
Awesome. Well, on the socials, I'm at Sierra.McCleave. It's M-C-C-L-E-V-E. Sierra's S-I-E-R-R-A. So that's my personal gram. I love talking business. If you have any questions, let me know. And then Thirst is at Thirst Drinks. Dottie's is at Dottie's Kolaches. And there's websites for all of that. And I'd love to hear from any of you about what you're working on. And if you have any questions, if I can help at all, I'd love it.
She's awesome. She's definitely helped me out already a lot and in my bakery. And so, yeah, I'm just super excited to see what you do with all those things. And I can't wait to try a kolache. Whatever that is, I'm super excited. So
let's try these. I'm excited to try your cookies right now. Let's do it.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, thanks again for everything. And we will see you all next week.